It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And once again, it definitely seems like the topic of the week is starting pitching. We're going to start with something we kind of admittedly have incomplete information on right now, because as we speak, Tyler Glasnow is about to take the mound for the Pirates. How much are you getting on board with Glasnow, given opportunity, given performance, given skill set, all of that?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited, you know, despite the fact that they kind of made him wait a little longer than I think a lot of people thought he would. I'm still pretty excited about him. This will sound really bad to listeners if he gives up 8 runs or something in his debut today. But, yeah, I know the control is an issue for sure, but he just, in the minors, has been so hard to hit. I mean, this season in AAA, he's only given up 57 hits in 96 innings. I'm not saying he'll be that dominant against, you know, opposing batters in the majors, but this seems like someone who could survive as a youngster despite a high walk rate. Are you feeling, like, pretty optimistic on him as well?
Yeah, I mean, I have to, I get that, and I certainly get that missing bats is it, but the two things that kind of stand out to me are, one, that I just feel like the whole Pirates situation is in flux enough, and there are enough guys with who they're trying to get chances to, that I'm not sure how much you can really be confident that any of these guys is going to regularly have an opportunity. They sort of almost have too many good options. But the other thing is, it is really hard for me to look past the walks. You know, a few too many walks is one thing, and I don't necessarily think it means that I'm down on his chances in the long term. I think that's something you can refine. It's something that we've seen guys do better. I mean, that was a knock on, well, this may be a bad example, but it was a knock on Chris Archer, and he seemed to harness that. So it certainly can come with time, but, you know, I have a hard time believing that that's something that's instantly going to get better in the big leagues, and these guys have better strike zones. So he could be really good, and if it comes together, great, and if working with a big league pitching coach helps, you know, I'm not ruling it out, but yeah, for the real short term, that walk rate makes me nervous.
Yeah, I'm picturing this season maybe a lot of 5-inning, yeah, 6 strikeouts, you know, but three or four walks.
Right.
But if he can hold the hits down to say about 3, and then, you know, then the ERA is okay and the WHIP's okay, and it's the strikeouts that you really come for. And I agree with you about the Pirates' rotation. I think they have maybe a lot of options. Maybe the way they've been pitching, some of the pitchers, not a lot of good options. Cole will be back. Tyone will be back. But Locke hasn't pitched well. Liriano hasn't pitched well. I don't know if they'll take either of them out of the rotation, but that would be hard. If Glasnow pitches really well in his first 1 or 2 starts, then that might force their hand on it.
No, it's true. It's true. Joe Ross goes on the DL. The Nationals, as of right now, do not sound very concerned. They sounds like they're kind of playing this down. It sounds like they're saying that, you know, this is, to some extent, it's almost precautionary. But I talked to Bill Ladson yesterday for MLB.com Extras, and one thing he said was that they really want Ross to throw his slider less. That may be connected to the discomfort he's feeling, that it may be connected to him having some physical issues. That makes me kind of nervous. So, we'll talk about his replacement in a second, but, you know, even if Ross comes back, how much does it dent his value to you to be thinking that this guy might not be pitching with all of his weapons for the rest of the year?
No, that's definitely a big source of concern, between that and the fact that he's injured right now. You know, so whether he'll be pitching at full strength or not, whether he's really injured or not, significantly injured or not. You're right. Like, there's no real way to get to the bottom of that. Teams will sometimes downplay the situations, but on the other hand, also, we're right around the All-Star break, when sometimes teams use that break for short DL stints to give someone needed rest who's maybe just not quite at 100%. So, to me, it takes Ross from maybe like a must start in regular mixed leagues to, you know, I still want him on my roster, but I'm going to maybe gauge how he does when he comes back in those initial starts before I jump right back in.
I think you just raised a point that is really worth knowing. And I think, you know, serious fantasy players and people who follow baseball really avidly realize this, but I'm sure that not everybody who listens to us fits those categories, and so I think it's a good thing to remember. You're going to see some odd-looking transactions around this time of year. Kyle Davies just got optioned. You can see some of these even DL moves, but more commonly option moves around the All-Star break that really don't mean anything. A team maybe wants to skip a guy one start, and so you can send him down for 10 days, or maybe even doesn't even want to miss a start. Because of the break, teams will do some interesting transactions, and so I think it's a good moment here to remind fantasy players not to panic if you see a guy that you like who gets optioned right now, or in some cases even DL'd. I don't think that's the case with Joe Ross, but you know, sometimes at this time of year, a really minor injury where maybe a guy's only going to be out for a few days, they'll put him on the DL because you bake in those 4 days of the All-Star break. So it's just a thing to remember. I think some people realize that, but maybe not everybody does.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the Blue Jays just did that with Marco Estrada in the sense of, you know, he has a sore back, and maybe in a regular time of the season they just push him back or cover him for one start. But with the All-Star break mixed in there, you know, they put him on the DL. They get the extra time off. He can be back basically for his first turn in rotation after the break. And, you know, it's something fantasy owners are a little frustrated they don't get a start out of him this week. But other than that, it doesn't really matter.
Matt Moore has at least twice, and it feels like three times this year, taken a no-hit bid more than an inning or two. And recently, it hasn't even ended in heartbreak every time. There were a couple of those that were very the sort of definitive Matt Moore. It felt like four no-hit innings and then just completely comes unglued in the fifth. But the ungluing is coming less and less. He is starting to look like more and more like the guy that got people excited a few years ago. He's never going to have great control. He's always going to walk some guys. But, you know, talk about somebody who can miss some bats. How intriguing do you find Matt Moore right now?
Yeah, I'm interested. I mean, he's not missing, like, bats at a really high rate this year. Like, he's 93 strikeouts in 103 innings, and that's solid, but not, like, incredible. When I look at his recent starts, you're right, he's been much better, and that one poor start in his last five outings came at Baltimore, which is one of the toughest matchups in baseball this season. The other four came at home. So I would say maybe I'm back on board with Moore to the point where in a regular mixed league, I would use him in a home start in a favorable start. But I wouldn't say I'm 100. I can't be 100% in on him yet. Like, I wouldn't use him out of Baltimore, Boston, Toronto, something like that. But, yeah, I'm back into the point where I would want to own him in a regular mixed league just because we know there's a high ceiling there.
And I think you make a good point. A guy like that, at least until and unless he gets traded, you really want to play the matchups because there's going to be a wide range of those between, you know, getting the Yankees at home. I like that a lot for Matt Moore, pitching at Baltimore, which is, you know, both a tough park and a team that's really tough on left-handers. That's a really bad matchup. So, yeah, I think a guy like that, it becomes almost like a Rockies hitter in that you can really sort of play those matchups, and you really hope to be able to take advantage of that because it is going to vary a lot based on opponent and ballpark.
Yeah, something positive I'm noticing looking at Moore also is that, you know, the Rays are known for not letting their starters work deep into games. He's been going six or more innings in all of his recent starts, and they're letting him push his pitch count right up to about 110 on average in his starts. So, you know, that's a really positive sign for him, especially someone who is prone to, you know, has been prone to those really bad innings that shorten his own starts.
Yep. The Dodgers are about to get, or have gotten one starter and about to get another. Brandon McCarthy, Hyunjin Ryu, both back, one back, one imminently back. It's kind of hard. I'm not sure who I prefer because I think I prefer Ryu, the pitcher. But I think that even with McCarthy's health history, I'm probably a little more confident that he's going to make 15 starts the rest of the way than I am Ryu. How do you rate these guys relative to each other?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you that I think McCarthy's more likely to just stay in the rotation the rest of the way. I'm not super excited about McCarthy. Like, his strikeout rate tends to be fine, not special. He can keep his whip down at times, but, you know, looking back at him, like, we're going back to, he had a really nice season in 2014, or at least that stretch in 2014 with the Diamondbacks. Other than that, been pretty up and down the last few years. I think I would rather take my chances in most mixed leagues on Ryu, because with Ryu, like when he has pitched in the majors, like career 3.17 ERA. So, yeah. You know, there is that potential that he's shown. He's always been good. So if he's healthy, he could be really good. But I would be less surprised if I saw Ryu back on the DL in August.
Right. And that's, look, but it's one of those things that we, you know, it's one of those sort of old-time fantasy concepts. You kind of like guys who are good or hurt, as long as you're not risking a high draft pick, and obviously you're not on Ryu at this point, but you kind of would rather have good or hurt than probably good.
Yeah, especially in a mixed league. In a mixed league, I'll take Ryu and just, you know, take my chances. You're probably going to put him on your bench for his first start or two and see how it goes and then take my chances from there. You know, if I was in an NL-only league, I'd probably rather have McCarthy because I just need the counting stats. But,
right.
Yeah, in a mixed league, especially at the back end of your pitching staff, like, you need to take chances on pitchers like that. That's why rookies are such hot commodities. And, you know, Ryu's far from a rookie. But this is the same kind of thing where it's, like, almost like boom or bust. It's almost like he's 100%. He's really valuable. Or he isn't 100%, and then he's not usable in a mixed league at all.
Yeah. Aaron Nola is really struggling here lately. The Phillies are going to skip him in Denver, understandably and probably mercifully. I liked him early in the year, but I don't feel like he's a guy you can't drop in a mixed league. Do you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say you can't drop him. I'm still pretty optimistic on him. I mean, like, he's been so bad. His ERA is up to 4.69. His FIP this season is still 3.21. I mean, that's a really nice fit for someone who a lot of mixed league owners are dropping and are talking about dropping. I would be inclined to pick him up if he was on waivers in a mixed league right now and put him on my bench, or buy super low on him in a deeper mixed league if someone was just, you know, ready to give him away for almost nothing, and maybe hope that this extended layoff here, you know, gets him back, because he was really, really good during, you know, April, May, and the beginning of June. It's really interesting to see someone go from so good to so bad so quickly. And this is someone who's always expected to be really good.
Well, but that's the question, right? I mean, I sort of feel like that's what I can't shake. And the thing with Nola that I can't sort of get out of the back of my head is that what he did the first 2 months or so of this year kind of is out of line with what I expected. He's a guy that from draft day through the minors, he was never a guy that really projected as a frontline kind of starter. He was a guy who was a high floor, low ceiling kind of guy. And so I absolutely admit that part of my assessment of him and part of why I'm sort of skeptical and why I'm more worried than some people about him is that I never thought he was a guy who would really be the kind of pitcher he looked like for stretches earlier this year when he was striking out a bunch of guys, when he was really kind of pitching like a two. That was never really what he profiled as. So part of my concern with him at this point is I'm not willing to rule out that was just the best 6 weeks of his life.
Yeah, that's possible. But I think you also mentioned that, you know, he's someone who you felt like had a pretty high floor and would be a solid major league starter. And like, he can't even get four starts in a row where he couldn't even finish four innings.
Right.
Isolating those five starts that got him skipped in the rotation, his BABIP allowed in those five starts is .530. And that's, you know, a good 200-plus points over what it should be. Even over a regular rough stretch, for a pitcher, it's probably 150 points over what a pitcher would experience in a regular rough stretch now. So, you know, I'm willing to give him maybe just I'm still willing to buy low on him. I wouldn't want him in my lineup for his first start back from the All-Star break, but I'm not giving up yet.
Yeah, that's fair. We move on to the bats, and Mike Trout is doing Mike Trout things. And in fact, Mike Trout right now is doing more Mike Trout things than he has done in a while. The main thing that jumps out, aside from the batting average, but that's never that shocking. He's 300, he's 320 now. Mike Trout has stolen 14 bases this year. That's more than he had last year. That's almost as many as he had in 14. And it's not that far off the pace of what he had in 2013. Given that he is hitting .323, given that he is stealing bases again, given that he is hitting for power pretty much like always, is there even any question to you that from here to the end of the year, If you were to redraft just from now to the end of the year, would there even be a hard call for Mike Trout to be the number one pick?
I guess I can make a decent argument for Jose Altuve because he's been the best player so far this season. But I think Trout, yeah, I mean, we talked a lot before the season about Trout versus Harper, and it was kind of Trout's consistency against Harper's, you know, incredible potential. And, you know, Trout's done, he's done what he always does so far this year. But you're right, he has been just a little bit better across the board, and the steals uptick. We talked early in the season about him saying he wanted to steal more bases and whether that actually mattered. Turns out in his case it has mattered. And he's 14 for 15 stealing bases. You know, last year he was 11 for 18. So he's not only running more, he's running much more effectively, which probably goes hand in hand. You know, when I compare him to Harper right now, you know, Harper's kind of keeping pace with him in a lot of the counting stats. Harper has 11 steals and 18 homers. You know, Trout has 14 steals and 18 homers. Harper's batting average is way lower. His BABIP's also, though, way lower. Yeah, Trout's the safe choice, and he's the one I would take first overall. And he'll probably be the one to go first overall next season, even if he's not always. What's amazing about Trout is, you know, we're talking about him being a lock to go first overall for a second-half draft, and he hasn't been the best player in fantasy so far this year, Altuve has. But the consistency of him is just so appealing.
Right. I mean, look, I think if you had told both of us at the beginning of the year, I'm not going to give you any other piece of information about the upcoming season. I'm not going to tell you anything else. I'm going to give you this one little nugget. At the All-Star break, Mike Trout's going to have 14 steals. Just knowing that and knowing nothing else and just throwing that in with all of the other assessments, I think even that on draft day might have been enough to tilt it and say, okay, you know what, I really like Harper, but if you tell me Trout's going to run again, knowing everything else we know about him, that's probably my 1-1 this year coming into the season.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, I mean, the things we love about Trout, you can pretty much bank roughly a 300 average. You know, you can bank 30-something home runs, 100-something RBIs, 100 runs. You know, when you throw in, if you feel like you can bank 20-plus steals, then that finishes it off for him with the consistency as being the most valuable player.
Also in Southern California, in long-standing reliable players but much less good news, Adrian Gonzalez is just really not producing and is certainly not producing power lately. He has 6 home runs. He's hitting .284. He's driving in a decent number of runs, I guess, though not for a first baseman. Are you at a point where you might even think about dropping Adrian Gonzalez in a mixed league?
I don't think so. I think I would still keep him. I think I would try to trade him, I guess, if I was really that sold that, you know, if I didn't want him anymore, if I was really frustrated. June was definitely a bad month, but I mean, he's hit well in the first few games of July. He's hitting .429 in his first 6 games in July. He hit .286 in April and .312 in May. So it's everything is kind of okay except the home run total is just really bad. He's even his RBI total, as you said, isn't awesome, but it's not that bad. It's just the home run total is so bad. I just don't think I could drop him just over that one category.
I hear that, but you sure can't start. I mean, here's what I look at. I look at a guy with 3 home runs since May 1st. I mean, this is not, you know, again, the average has been good, but 3 home runs since May 1st. He had 8 RBI in June. Look, maybe he turns this around, and he has been very reliable, but this is age 34 season. For example, in a shallow mixed league, I have Gonzalez. So I didn't drop him, but Justin Bour was on the waiver wire recently. Now, look, he's hurt, but before he got hurt, I happily picked him up and thought about dropping Gonzalez to do it. I just feel like, and again, maybe not drop him, but I feel like in shallow mixed leagues, in a lot of leagues, there's going to be a guy on the waiver wire who's going to outproduce Adrian Gonzalez at first base.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. And I do sometimes think of things as a bit of a deep league owner because most of my leagues will be 15 teams or deeper. And in those things, just having like the locked-in RBI total right. And some runs and everything matters. But you're right. In a shallow league, you know, how about this? Do you think there'll be a 6 homer month for Adrian Gonzalez in the last 3 months of the season?
It's hard for me to see that.
Feel like that's going to happen, then
yeah.
There's probably no month where you just say to yourself, like, oh, I can't believe I dropped this guy. You know, he's been so good in August. 6 homers and 21 RBIs, and he's hitting .320 this month. Like, then I could get on board with that. I do think there's probably still a trade market for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what that's what you'd like to do is just find somebody who'll give you some asset for him if you can, because again, it's a name, and hopefully you can trade on the name value. Danny Espinosa is coming off of a historic series and a great week, and just keeps hitting home runs. And he's a guy who has the capacity to really kill you in batting average. He's not doing that this year, and you know, some of the peripherals. He's shown a little bit better strike zone than in some years, which leads me to believe that maybe he can, you know, continue not hitting 190. If nothing else, I feel like he's safe. It's hard to imagine him losing his job before the end of the year. Is Espinosa a guy that you're looking to sell high on if you have him? If any interest in getting in on him at this point?
Yeah, I think I don't think he has enough name value maybe to sell high on him. I just don't know. Like, I know the 18 homers, maybe you could get something for him, but I just don't know if you could get enough for him to make it worth it. I think if you were either smart enough or got lucky enough to have picked up Espinosa at the right time, now I think you just ride it out, because you're right, he's not helping your batting average, but he's not killing it. Like, he's hitting .245. His BABIP's not even high this year, so I mean, he's not getting lucky. He's hitting .245, which isn't that. He's a career .232 hitter, so it's not that much different. And yeah, I think you just ride out this power streak for as long as you can, and then if he has a couple of weeks where he doesn't hit a home run and hits .170, then you're ready to jump off.
What does this do to you if you are holding Trey Turner and hoping to get something out of him this year?
Yeah, this is really frustrating for Trey Turner owners, because the narrative early in the season was, obviously Turner belongs in the majors. Obviously he's better than Espinosa. And obviously the Nats are just keeping him in the minors for, long-term reasons and they're being foolish or whatever. But Espinosa's showing that, maybe the Nats knew something all along, or at least, it's worked out fine for them. He plays well at shortstop, and he's hitting for power, and they're happy. So to me, Turner's no longer, that, prime stash option. That being said, most of the stash options have already been scooped up or have already come up to the majors. So I guess you just hold them. But like, do you think we see Turner before September, barring an injury?
No. I mean, unless it's the kind of thing they did already once this year, where it's just for a few days. I could see that, where they had a short-term need, whatever. Somebody, like you say, somebody's hurt but not DL'd, and you go with him with a short stint, that kind of thing. But no, he's not going to come up on merit, I don't think, before roster expansion.
Yeah, and at that point, I'd rather have Alex Bregman, for example, from the Astros, right. And he was way down the list of potential call-ups in April compared to Turner, but, the Astros would benefit a lot more, I think, from bringing him up and putting him at third base,
right,
than the Nats would right now from bringing up Turner and putting him anywhere.
Yep. We stick with the Nationals, and we were just recently talking about a potential center field platoon in Washington, and now Michael Taylor is in the minor leagues, and I mean, I guess he could go down there and really rake, but he's not a guy who dominated at every level of the minors even, so I don't think that's a given. So that would seem to suggest that Ben Revere is pretty safe right now. He is going to be an everyday guy. He hasn't hit a whole lot yet, but with the potential for runs and steals, his value's got to go up. How much do you like him, particularly as a steals option for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I'm a pretty big Ben Revere fan, just because steals are really hard to come by. Backdating it. So, I mean, I also think sometimes we're hard on players who have an injury when they first come back. I mean, basically his season didn't start. Like, he was injured in the first week of the year, and then he was out for about a month. And then when he first came back, he just didn't look like himself for about 3 weeks. Maybe he had poor luck on batted balls. Maybe he just wasn't 100% yet, but since June 5th, so about a month, he's hitting .297, and that's pretty much the Ben Revere we know. And when he hits, he steals bases, and there aren't a lot of base stealers around. He's still sitting on waivers in a lot of shallow leagues. I would pick him up now. I think he holds that job from here on out. Now that he's got it back, I don't see why he can't hit .290 the rest of the way, and if he's hitting .290, he's among the league leaders in steals from here on out.
And again, this is a guy in that lineup, leading off in front of Worth, Murphy, Harper. If he gets on base even sometimes, he's going to score some runs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, there's no power there. He's not going to drive himself in ever, but, you know, yeah, he's good. And we haven't seen probably the best of Harper so far. We did for a while in April, but he's someone who could get, you know, red hot at some point in the second half and just, you know, really push Revere's run score numbers up.
Troy Tulowitzki, since returning from the DL, 317, 380, 683, 7 homers in 16 games, 10 runs, 17 RBI. Everything looks really good for him right now. Is there still a buy low window on Tulowitzki, or if you've got him, are you basically sticking with him now?
Yeah, I think it's probably closed. I was interested in, you know, hopefully this is it and he's locked in the rest of the way. I was wondering if there'll ever be if he keeps going like this for a little while, a little bit of a sell high window on Tulo, in the sense if we have the better part of a year of him not being productive as a member of the Blue Jays, and now about 2 weeks or so of him being really productive. So it's kind of which one do you believe? And the injury risk with him is always so great. You know, he's already been on the disabled list twice. I'm not sure if he's officially on it last year at the end of the year because it was September, but he would have been otherwise. But he's basically been on the disabled list twice in less than a year with Toronto. You know, if he hits two or three more homers before the All-Star break, you know, is there a sell high window where you could trade him for one of the other top shortstops and maybe get someone a little safer?
The other thing that jumps out to me, and I don't want to make, I probably shouldn't even, I don't want to make too much of a really small sample, but you look at when he's in this hot streak since he's come back, a lot of the damage he has done, particularly as far as batting average, but also with the power, has been at home. That's a really good place to hit, and I sort of wonder if that's a little tilted. I don't know. I'm just kind of looking for cracks here, but I do wonder if maybe, you know, as things balance out, if maybe things look a little different. Now, he's also done it. I would also note, and probably the counter to that is that homestand has been against the Indians and Royals, so it's not like those are cheap pitchers. So, but he's a guy who we waited a long time. I'm still just not sure what to do with him. I'm probably holding whether I do or don't have him at this point, honestly.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, though, about the parks. And then beyond that, I noticed in the middle of June that the Blue Jays were set to play every game through to the All-Star break at hitter-friendly parks. And So he's hit homers beyond the ones he's hit at home. Yep. He's hit them recently in Baltimore, at the White Sox, and at the Rockies. Yep. And, I mean, it's just like Josh Donaldson is absolutely on fire right now. Edwin Encarnacion's on fire right now. Ezekiel Carrera's playing well right now. Part of that is that the Blue Jays have been playing they haven't played at a pitcher-friendly park, you know, for weeks. So, and I mean, after the All-Star break, they will. They start off in Oakland. So, and they're going to go to Tampa again this year and places like that. So, I mean, it's not going to be all roses and sunshine with Tulo. Yeah, I don't know. If I could trade him to an owner of my league that needed power for one of those maybe speedy young shortstops, I'd have to think about it.
Yeah, certainly. I would say this. I'm not totally holding in all circumstances because I am definitely listening if somebody's calling me about him. If I've got him and somebody's calling and excited, I am definitely listening to what they have to say. Javier Baez is at a point for his full season line where he's starting to look like a pretty good regular major league hitter. You go back to June 1st, he's hitting .294, 7 homers in 32 games, playing a pretty good amount of the time, which is obviously one of the big questions with him. Is this a guy that you should be looking around and seeing if he might even be on the waiver wire in your league?
Yeah, I think for sure. I think with the multi-position eligibility that he carries, you know, and he's eligible in a lot of leagues at three positions and three infield positions, it's so valuable. You know, I think he's the perfect guy to kind of finish off that mixed league roster because you can move him around. And to me, he also complements the Cubs lineup so well because Baez is really his best. He's at his best against lefties, and there are a lot of hitters in that lineup that are really good against righties. So I think he complements that lineup really well. I think he'll be in it a lot the rest of the way. Joe Maddon is a smart guy with mixing and matching his lineup and keeping everyone involved. I think he needs to be owned. And he also has that power potential to have. He's hit a few home runs in his recent games. He has that power potential, you know, to have that 6, 7, 8 home run month.
Yeah, that's the one thing that will never shock you. Any given week or month, if he goes crazy, power-wise, I don't think anybody's really going to be surprised by that.
Would you drop Adrian Gonzalez for him?
I really might. I would seriously think about that in a shallow mixed league type of format. The upside of a guy like Baez, the possibility of him just going nuts, I would have to think about that if I had that option, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really more of a referendum on Gonzalez and just you're
right,
not afraid to drop him. And if you had to later in a shallow league, you could always drop Baez and just if someone else really, really caught your eye. But, yeah, that's the – and I mean, just the ability to use – especially if you had Gonzalez and you also had a really like a Trumbo or someone like that,
right. You
know, and then – so you didn't really need him. And then you pick up Baez, who you can mix and match all over the place.
Yep. I sort of feel like there might still be, even with the week he has had, I sort of feel like there might still be a buy low opportunity on Giancarlo Stanton. Now, he has been out of his mind now, really going back for 3 weeks now. He's been hitting .338 over the last 3 weeks, so... this is not just out of nowhere, but I still feel like there is a little – he's shown flashes and then fallen back a couple of times before. I feel like if you really believe that this time it's real and that he's going to be the guy that we know from here to the end of the year, you can't get him for pennies on the dollar, but I feel like you might still be able to get him for less than full value. And I feel like I'd like to be on the buying end of that deal. Do you see it that way, or you think maybe that opportunity is already gone?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right about the pennies on a dollar. You could have gotten him for a lot less a couple of weeks ago. Now, I still don't think you pay, though, first-round pick price for him.
Right.
And he was a first-round pick in most leagues this year. I mean, his owner's going to look at that .231 batting average so far this year and say, well, I can't get first-round pick price for him. And I don't know, maybe to me, Stanton, in my mind, is kind of becoming like a Chris Davis, where if you're going to own him, and you're just going to ride the hot and the cold, and at the end of the year, you know, the 40 home runs are going to be there, you know, assuming he stays healthy. That's how I've always felt with Chris Davis. I think you're either in or you're out, and there's going to be a month where he hits 180 and you're really frustrated, but then there's going to be a different month where he hits 11 home runs. That's kind of how I feel with Stanton, and he's probably a really good trade target for owners who are looking at their standings and thinking the only way I can win my league is to have a massively powerful second half, because he's one of the few players that could do that.
Yeah, I feel like the thing with Stanton that is a little different is that I'm not expecting him to hit 280, 290, but I think you've got a lot more chance of getting that than you do from somebody like Davis. I think you're shocked if you get 280, 290 from Davis. I don't think you're shocked if you get that over the next 3 months from Giancarlo.
Yeah, I would be pleasantly surprised if I got that. I guess over 3 months I might not be. You're right, he has done it. Like, he's hit 290 before, he's hit 288 in a season before. So you're right, maybe he does a little more batting average upside. But, I mean, I think you just ride the ebbs and flows with him, and it's probably a good lesson for fantasy owners, because I know from the Twitter chat sessions that there were a lot of owners just willing to sell him really, really cheap a couple weeks ago.
We move to the closer portion of our program, and Jonathan Papelbon looks like he's stepped right in. Everything is normal there. How much do you like Papelbon for the rest of the year, given that he's been effective? He's not, even now, not the high K guy he used to be.
Yeah, he's starting to drift towards that one category reliever. You know, I feel like, I mean, his ERA was really low last season. This season it's kind of now to the point where it's 3.04, so it's helping you, but not much with the amount of innings he pitches. Yeah, he's starting to drift towards that one category reliever. Once you get to the point where you only get, you know, 55 strikeouts or something in a season and your ratios aren't awesome anymore, he should be in your lineup in a mixed league, assuming you need saves, but, you know, he doesn't even touch the top 10 closers or something anymore.
Carlos Estevez looks like he has stepped into the role in Denver in the ninth inning, but I don't know that that's really safe. He's been good but not great. And also a guy who held the job not that long ago, Adam Ottavino, is back on a big league mound. Now, look, I don't think they're going to rush Ottavino back into the ninth, but is Estevez an option for anybody more than people really desperate for saves?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you know, I mean, I get like in a 12-team league or deeper, there aren't enough closers to go around. So, I mean, he has to be owned, and if you need saves, you have to use him. And if you don't need saves, someone else in your league, if you own Estevez, probably does. And you can probably trade him for something of at least a little value. But, I mean, if I own him, I'm nervous every time he goes out there, especially when he goes out there at home. And we've rarely seen closers have long, productive stretches with the Rockies. I mean, Houston Street was solid with them, but in general, we haven't really seen that. And I don't see him as the guy to do it. Do you?
I mean, look, I didn't think Jemar Gomez was going to be the guy to do it either, and he did. But I'll put it this way. He's in the category of guys I'm willing to be wrong on. I'm willing to miss that opportunity and let somebody else get 15 saves from here to the end of the year from him.
Yeah, you're right. And Gomez is that cautionary tale for the reason that, you know, if you are in a 12-team league or deeper, if you see someone who has a closer's role on your waiver wire, you probably need to pick him up because you just don't know how. And Fernando Rodney, for example, this year, I mean, nobody believed in Fernando Rodney going into the season and really wanted to own him in fantasy, and he was really productive until he was traded. So you don't know, and it's such small sample size with closers that he needs to be owned, but I don't think I'd rather have Soon Wano, for example, from the Cardinals right now, and he's still available in a lot of shallow leagues.
It looks like Brandon Maurer is going to be the guy in the absence of the aforementioned Fernando Rodney. I don't know that that is a secure situation. You know, Buchter is another guy who I think people were looking at when that deal happened. I'm not sure. Again, same kind of thing. I mean, look, I certainly like the circumstances a lot better in San Diego than in Colorado, but I don't know that I have a lot of faith in any one guy to get 15 saves from now to the end of the year. Is there one guy you like? I mean, is it Maurer? Are you more interested in somebody else? How do you kind of look at that?
Yeah, I'd say I'm more interested in Maurer than I am in Estevez, partially, like, mostly because of the home park. Also, Maurer, you know, he had a 3.00 ERA as a reliever with the Padres last year. So, I mean, he can be okay. I think maybe there's less blow-up potential there. But to me, he's similar. Like, he'd be really fringy in a 10-team league. I'd only pick him up in that league if I was desperate for saves. You know, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, he's the kind of guy that I want to chase in a 10-team league because I feel like he could be like a multi-category contributor, whereas I feel like Maurer, Estevez are just going to be one-category contributors. At least Maurer's also striking out a lot of batters this year.
Right. In Kansas City, Wade Davis goes on the DL. Herrera seems like the automatic guy to step into that, but then in his first game after that has a rough time. I picked up Herrera. I believe he's a guy. Look, one of the things about Herrera is even if he doesn't get you any saves, he's a guy who's going to be get you. He's going to help you in a couple other ways. But is it that cut and dried, or are you a little hesitant? Not hesitant, but are you nervous even if you pick up Herrera that you might not get the guy who gets the saves?
Yeah, it could be Joaquin Soria. I mean, last night, like I was interested in how he was used last night more so than how he fared. I mean, he gave up the two runs in Toronto. I watched that game. He was a little unfortunate. Like, he looked incredible against the first two batters he faced and struck them both out and then, you know, gave up a few hits. And, you know, I'm not doubting his skill set at all, but he was used in the eighth inning of a tie game. So they were not saving him for a save chance. Now, he was used against the top of the order. They were coming up 1-2-3 in that eighth inning, but they didn't save him for a save chance. So I don't, you know, if Herrera gets four saves before Davis comes back, I wouldn't be surprised. But to be honest, if he got zero, I wouldn't be surprised either.
So, given that all of those guys are pretty appealing just as far as ability, how are you handling that? Are you looking to pick up Soria? Although I think he may be a less compelling guy in other categories than saves. How are you proceeding with that Royals situation?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I guess you could pick up both and use them. If you had daily transaction, you could pick up both relievers and put them in your lineup because they should both be assets to your ratios. In a deeper league, you know, I'd rather just pick up more Maurer, I should say, and take my chances and hope that he turns out rather than just trying to get a few saves for a couple weeks because they seem to think Wade Davis won't be out for that long. I actually, in a 15-team league, I randomly picked up Herrera a week ago just to fill a pitching spot, not because I thought something was up. And I traded him yesterday morning for Max Kepler of the Twins. Not a big trade, but that kind of gives an impression of where I think his value is at. I was just happy to get kind of someone who kind of intrigued me for him. Before before we get post All-Star break and the Royals start talking about how Davis is going to be back in a week. That's my concern, is that with that week, with that time off in there, by the time we're talking next week, the Royals might be saying, oh, Davis is throwing, he should be back any day.
Right. Jameson Taillon goes to the DL. It is the word in the transaction is shoulder, which is definitely scary. How scared are you about Taillon when you hear the word shoulder?
Yeah, I'm trying to be not that scared, because they are saying he should be back right after the All-Star break. So, I mean, for someone who's been so injury prone, I mean, it's definitely concerning. But the official injury is right shoulder fatigue. So not a real injury per se. And maybe this is like we talked about earlier today, like maybe this is a situation where it's Pittsburgh's chance to kind of rest someone who wasn't feeling 100% and frame that around the All-Star break. Like, would this be enough to make you drop him in any league if you owned him?
No, I don't think so. I think if I was willing to hold on to him for the, you know, without guaranteed starts, I'm probably holding on to him at least to see how this goes, at least to see if he's back in a couple of weeks. With the All-Star break, with all of that, I'm willing to wait a little while at least.
Yeah, and he has been dropped in some leagues. I noticed that. I've seen his ownership percentage drop at some of the major sites, and you know, I get it, like shallow league and people are streaming pitchers and, you know, he can't help them today, so they drop him. But in most leagues, yeah, I think I would wait, especially if we do see a positive report, you know, through the All-Star break or right after that, you know, that he's maybe got a return date set.
Taijuan Walker, who has been very good this year, is dealing with a foot injury that won't go away. I feel like you kind of hope that they just actually shut him down for a while and get him right rather than continuing to fight through this. Is there a situation where you're dropping Walker, or are you going to wait it out no matter what?
Yeah, I think I'm going to wait it out at least for a couple weeks, especially with the All-Star break in there. I think I'm going to wait it out for at least a couple weeks and see where they're at with him. I agree with you. I hope that feet are tricky, like, for baseball players, especially for pitchers. Like, they're really important. And, sometimes you see foot and you're like, oh, okay, not a big deal. It's not arm injury or anything. But, I mean, this is just will not go away with him, and it seems to be really affecting him. That being said, he's had some good starts recently. So, I'm not dropping him if I can avoid it.
All right. That is the Fantasy 411 for this week. I'm Matthew Leach. He's Fred Zinke. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred, for taking some time to talk.
Yeah, we'll see you next week after the All-Star break.